when we go home on a Friday night, we may not be reading white papers. We might be watching short form content, if we're being honest, or watching Netflix or listening to our favorite podcasts.
Revenue makers.
Thank you. Exactly. Revenue makers. We've seen companies like Substack and Patreon in the consumer context. And so if we can sort of enroll people into becoming subscribers of your brand beyond just being customers of the product, I think we'll be able to see increasing conversion rates because we're targeting people that may not be ready yet to buy, but they care.
This is Revenue Makers, the podcast by Sixth Sense, investigating successful revenue strategies that pushed companies ahead. Hey, Adam, who we got today?
So am I ever not excited?
You always start with how excited you are, but I think that's a good thing.
But I should be like, well, today's guest, I'm not excited about. No. So we've got Anthony Kenneda, who was the CMO at Gainsight, really helped build that CS category, has now made the transition to CEO and founder of Audience Plus, which is a platform that's playing in the, basically the media brand space, and also how to build really a first party data moat for all your content. And if anyone's been out there watching social media, LinkedIn, there's all this talk about how do you build your own audience? How are you creating that first party data? Because of the fact that the digital world is going insane with cookie deprecation and all sorts. So the insights are far and amazing across marketing, across being a founder, about how to create content, how to utilize the data. It's just chock full.
So it warrants the excitement. No, I would say for a lot of the marketing leaders listening, it was really cool to hear how his time as a CMO has made him a really great CEO and what he's thinking about that maybe a traditional product-led CEO wouldn't be thinking about. And then secondly, just how to take the power of first-party data to truly provide the right experience to the right buyer at the right time. So a lot of really tangible takeaways. I'm so excited for folks to listen in.
Yes, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Anthony, thanks so much for joining us. I've been looking forward to this one. Just been watching what's been going on in your world in terms of the company you've started. And you're sort of like in a parallel trajectory with a pretty significant shift in the world of marketing, content, media. So really excited to have you here. And I just wanted to like jump into, so you're a CMO who became a CEO. And talk us through what's that been like? And that's a pretty big loaded question, but where are you right now? How are you feeling with this whole thing? And like, I'm super, super interested in that.
Thanks for having me. First of all, excited to be here. And I've been reflecting on that very question for a while because I was like, how many can I count or reference many examples of CMOs turned CEOs? And I think of like Sarah Franklin, you know, she was Salesforce to Lattice, but there's not this like long list. And I'm trying to figure out if there's any patterns there, things I need to be worried about a little bit, but it's been great. What I would say is what you would probably expect to be true is true, that the go-to-market stuff's coming a little bit easier in the sense of, hey, we need to like, before we break ground on anything, like identify our personas, make sure we have some understanding of like messaging that's resonating and sort of approaching the product market fit challenge from the market side first. But then you've got the product challenges and figure out how to build software, which is something I've never done, how to work with an engineering team at great level of depth, which is something that on the marketing end, you know, I've done mostly through product as a proxy, but having to figure out the software development lifecycle, or at least enough to be dangerous to lead the company through, that's where a lot of the learning has been coming. So in general, I would say, I think I'm excited about learning. It definitely is. It's a great new challenge, but at our phase of going from zero to one, I think there's also like some wisdom in why you have a lot of product-driven founders, a lot of former engineers taking the seat.
Do you feel like there's things that you learned in the CMO role that are giving you an edge in this new role as CEO?
For sure. I think so. I mean, we're a seed stage company hosting conferences of 300 plus people. We're producing regular content marketing around thought leadership, and we're doing weird, unnatural things, getting a G2 quadrant built for our software category 1 year in markets. So I definitely think there is some advantage for sure, just to maybe the pattern recognition within marketing itself. So certainly think there is benefit. It's just, I think sometimes, if I'm being honest, I feel the pressure of also not relying on some of my biases, because a lot of that is like the 1 to 100 journey or kind of coming later. And I have to remember that we have to be scrappy. We're still not where we need to be from some of the basics, I would say, in the company building motions. So that's where I'm like trying to hold myself accountable to be like, hey, we haven't really earned the right to do some of this other stuff. Let's not completely get ahead of our skis and learn really all over again how to do 0 to 1 product development and things along those lines.
I want to dig into that, what happened with Gartner. It's Gartner, right? That happened suddenly.
Gartner and G2.
Yeah, things appeared. But before that, you just talk a little bit about like the birth or the idea around Audience Plus and your vision of what you're doing. It could be a little bit of a commercial because we want to hear about the company, but
sure. Yeah. So this was really something, when I think about it, I've been working on for about a decade as a CMO, mostly in-house, really. And it started during my time at Gainsight, where we were trying to educate the market around this idea of customer success. And we didn't invent it. Salesforce might get the credit for actually naming it. But there wasn't sort of an industry built around customer success, let alone a software platform to really operationalize the practice. What we wanted to do was really help invest in the taxonomy, the language. We wanted to be the sort of curators of the community. And as such, leverage all of that thought leadership value to drive pipeline. That was the idea behind it. How did that manifest on our website? We took our blog and we tried to turn it into the digital home for customer success, education, connection, whatever. And from the demand perspective, this was our like top of funnel digital surface where we were distributing content and building that engagement muscle. So the way we physically did that was gluing together a bunch of theme forest WordPress templates, basically to make it feel more media driven or a bit more consumer like. We used, I believe it was Marketo, to start collecting subscribers to our content, but really it was like a newsletter sign up form. And then we took all of this data and built it into like a, it's kind of like a homegrown data lake where we can look at all of the engagement at the individual level and then round it up at the account level. Eventually, I believe we used Sixth Sense to get even smarter with how we were leveraging that data. But we built it all in-house and we Frankensteined it and it worked, right? And then eventually I went to Front and I was the new guy. And so we worked with this agency and we were able to get a beautiful front door to our thought leadership on our website. But it was built on a existing CMS where we still required engineering resources to publish a blog post or to get some piece of content out the door. And we didn't get all the data that we really wanted. So at Hopin, as the CMO, I was like, okay, we're going to try this a third time, basically. I asked the brand team, and they're like, it's going to take like 6 months, several $100,000. We're going to get an RFP out to an agency. I'm like, okay, demand team, like you'll have it by Monday, but it's going to look like this. And I'm like, oh my God, we can't do that. And Salesforce Plus had just come out at that time. And to me, that was like this beautiful window into the future of distributing rich media, not just written articles, more consumer-like in how we built that engagement. They were collecting subscribers. So building that same first-party relationship with their audience. And just in reading some of the like launch materials, they were using that data to help inform their business decisions. So I was like, where's the Salesforce Plus as a service? Where's that platform for the rest of us where we can get started? And there wasn't. So yeah, it was kind of a long answer and more of a personal kind of reflection than anything. But I think the conviction is because of some of these headwinds, which I'm sure we're going to talk about today, Salesforce Plus and others represent really, I think, a vision of the future of content marketing, first party audience building, and how to leverage this data to help inform a lot of business decisions. And we want to ultimately build the underlying platform to power that.
I mean, it's so interesting. And of course, Sixth Sense focuses a lot on first party intent and third party beyond that. But what I'm sensing is Audience Plus is really about capitalizing on this first party data and delivering a really rich experience and almost putting it to work for you. Can you talk a little bit about how you are putting it to work and delivering on a really great experience?
Yeah. So some of the stuff is, we are still early. So this goes back to the CMO product tension. I will say that the core hypothesis of what we think we can bring to bear is an easy view of who is engaging with your content and who, outside of the context, of course, working with Sixth Sense, is what, Google Analytics or some of this other like impression-based data on how many anonymous aggregates of views or impressions of a specific blog post or views of a video and so on. And so I think what's interesting is through the first party context with Audience Plus, you can actually reveal who Jane Doe, CMO of Cisco, watched this video, listened to this podcast, read this blog post. And so that's part of it for us, is being able to reveal that and kind of build this journey of each individual throughout your universe, so to speak, throughout your thought leadership. We don't believe this data needs to be siloed in Audience Plus. So we also think about being able to almost become a channel into something like Sixth Sense, so we can port this data into a broader data context. And we have, I think, a couple of joint customers already that are using the platform in that way. But what I think I'm really excited about is sort of what's coming next for us, which, without giving away too much, being able to dive to basically look at individual identity and marry that with everything we can learn around individual pieces of content to infer what topics of content might be interesting to specific individuals, what formats, what creators across the network should we be partnering with to get better distribution on our content? And is it LinkedIn that's the right channel for amplification for this specific persona? Or is, ironically, YouTube Shorts the space we should be distributing this? That's where I think we're headed at the highest level. It's an exciting future.
When you think about it, you know, you said earlier the headwinds, right? Everyone's talking about first party data more than anything now because of cookie deprecation, because of just some of these search and all that, just losing their minds, let's just be honest, like in terms of what's going on. But ultimately, this is really leading to the idea the first party data comes from creating essentially a media brand becoming, and that's been something that's been out there for a little while, but now there's real, like Salesforce Plus started, I don't know if they started it, but they're certainly one of the early ones, but now this is happening all the time. So how do you view that in terms of, you've got a bunch of great customers that are already doing this. Would you say that as part of building this product and building this vision that you're really evangelizing the idea of B2B brands need to be a media brand, they should really be doing this? How do you think about that in terms of like both it being gasoline for your business to sell the platform? When more people building media brands is more revenue for you, but how should any B2B brand think about that and how to go about it?
So, I mean, I think there's, you hit on third-party cookie deprecation, search kind of evolving. There's also the fact that our attention as buyers of software is like, after things like TikTok have really like affected the neuroplasticity of our brains and our ability to consume content. And we think about just the dopamine feed that we get scrolling the LinkedIn news feed. How can an ebook compete for attention in that same context? So I think the mediums are changing, attention is changing. I think there's different shifts in pressure on marketing to run more efficiently as well. And so that's challenging. I think some of the paid investments as well, or it's just causing us to really take a very thoughtful look at the program budget as well. So I think we believe that the language around this is that we're trying to help evangelize is owned media, which I think, honestly, we've really indexed a lot on the media part and a little less on the owned side of it. So I'll break down both. On the media front, yeah, I think it's how can we meet our audience where they are and be a bit more consumer-like in terms of the formats that we produce. You know, in our personal lives, when we go home on a Friday night, we may not be reading white papers. We might be watching short form content, if we're being honest, or watching Netflix or listening to our favorite podcasts.
Revenue makers.
Thank you. Exactly. Revenue makers.
There is no other.
There is no other. Exactly. But the challenge is, at least in my experience, is, and to your point, Adam, we've produced this content before. We've produced podcasts. We've spent a lot of money in marketing, creating great video content and all of that. And what have we done traditionally? We've put it on YouTube. We put it on Spotify. We blast it through LinkedIn or through email. We drive some impressions and listens. And then about 2 weeks later, we get a call from the CEO and says, hey, how did that go? How did that 30K like studio project, you know, go, generate any pipeline from that? And then we're left with this posture of, we got 200 views on YouTube. I think there was a blip in traffic that day. I listened to some gong calls, like two customers referenced it. And that's our ability to talk about impact on some of these programs. So while that's true, I think that's been the challenge for why this whole like media company thing has been out there for a while, but not really adopted by the mainstream. And so the conviction that I have is there's a data problem, and which takes us back to this kind of first party kind of context. And so to me, that's where this owned thing gets really interesting. We've seen companies like Substack and Patreon in the consumer context really prove this value at scale, that people are willing to subscribe to content. They're willing to subscribe to follow their favorite creators, to access exclusive content. And I believe that's the trend that's making its way into businesses. And so I think my conviction is people are subscribing to Sixth Sense to access exclusive content and value that you guys are creating. through your thought leadership program, through your newsletters, through the amazing community that you've built, so on and so forth. And so if we can sort of, whether it's us as the platform or whoever, really enroll people into becoming subscribers of your brand beyond just being customers of the product, I think we'll be able to see increasing conversion rates because we're targeting people that may not be ready yet to buy, but they care, right? They're marketers, they have a pipeline target, they're here to learn, they're here to attend the events. And that's, to me, the path forward for the kind of content program, at least for within the marketing team.
No, and it's so true. I think what we hear a lot is everyone understands the need to provide the right content to the right person at the right time, right? To build a really meaningful, curated journey for your prospects and meet them where they are in that journey. But to balance that with how much more content do we need to be creating because of it? How do we be everything to everybody and still provide a customized experience? I mean, what are you seeing with you and your customer base about how something like Audience Plus can really help navigate that balance of needing to do more to do less?
Yeah, I love the analogy of being able to run your content program like Netflix runs theirs. Not saying everyone needs like a streaming service or a OTT app. Netflix uses first-party data to inform their content production decisions. These are the shows that we need to create with these specific actors or actresses in order to improve our subscription sales in this region or for this demographic or what have you. And then you think about that data-driven approach to some of these production decisions. And then you juxtapose that to kind of how we're doing it today, where traditionally, at least, we're coming up with the content we should be producing based on search intent data, right? Which is an important indicator, especially if you're optimizing around SEO. That is important. Second is what our CEO or CMO tells us to write about. Or we get into this cycle of like random acts of content, which makes it feel like we need more and more versus, I think the root of the question is being strategic with what topics are actually, or what formats or what investments are actually going to move the needle as we drive towards outcomes. So that's where I see that analogy being true for us as we transition into this future where we can use our first party data to help inform production decisions, how we distribute it, to whom. And I think there's honestly some really cool things coming out of, we made it this far without saying AI, so that's a good start. But some really cool AI technology that's helping with things like translations for international impact. So I think it's going to be really cool to see how we capitalize on this. But that's my hunch as to where it's going.
I was clicking through Audience Plus just last night and just looking at the depth of content that you're, and you're what, 30 person people at this point in terms of like?
We're six people at the company.
Oh, six people. Well, I don't know where I came up with 30. So you're producing at a level where like I'm seeing multiple shows, high production, and obviously the cost of entry, especially for video production, continues to go down. It's also can be incredibly daunting for small companies, or they're looking at this and being like, obviously video first is becoming more and more. And then you're trying to hit multiple audiences, multiple personas. What do you say to someone who's like, maybe I can create an episode every so often of an audio podcast. I don't even know where to start. And how am I going to do this in a way where someone would feel like, I'm not going to be building a massive network overnight. Like,
yeah.
What's the crawl, walk, run there?
Totally. So the crawl, I think, is commit to like one show, as it were. So come up with one concept targeting your core buyer audience or whoever it is you're trying to influence or build relationship with, and commit to whatever cadence you're comfortable with, whether it's, hey, every week we're going to drop one episode of something, every month, you name it. And what I found personally is I'm actually quite introverted. And so the more I do this, the more I'm either like creating a perception of being extroverted or just getting more comfortable with it.
Or a little bit of both.
Or maybe a little bit of both. But you start getting more comfortable. You start finding your rhythm. And I think over time, you're just kind of building the reps where the show's getting better from a quality perspective. You're building your viewership. You're building your audience. You're learning. You're getting better at distributing it, figuring out, hey, how do I clip this full episode into short form assets, distribute it on LinkedIn and drive viewership. So I would say from a crawl perspective, start small, but just start somewhere. The walk side is thinking about what are we already doing today? And it depends probably on the size and scale of company, but you know, you might already be producing a lot of written content from an SEO perspective. If you have, let's say, an initiative underway there, you might have done like webinars that you've got those archives sitting somewhere on a resource center today. And there's a chance to really kind of bring those back to life a little bit with your existing audience. You might host an event and have some stage footage from that conference that today, again, is living on a landing page versus integrated into your broader media platform, as we're sort of referring to it as. So on the walk side, I would say, what are we already doing today that is content that is valuable to that audience and just might not be articulated as part of a broader value proposition for the thought leadership that you're producing? And then the run sides, when it gets, you know, a little, if you get excited about all of this, I would say, well, let's look at our broader kind of ICPs and who are we targeting? And then if you're a little further along, you might have done a brand strategy project where you're articulating a narrative that maybe is what unifies across all of your personas or maybe specific to each. And then I think what I'm learning is coming up with a show for each one of them and crossing different formats. Could be audio, could be video, could be written newsletters for each. But I think there's a mapping at scale here to your specific buyer audiences and how are you leveraging media to deliver value or become helpful to them. But definitely don't get overwhelmed by that. Start with just one thing that you're doing. And I think that's a good starting point.
Thank you. That was a really thorough, really kind of, people can take away a whole lot from that answer. I was laughing midway because it hasn't been an episode this season that someone hasn't mentioned ICP. And so you just brought it up there. So
it probably just dropped last week.
Yeah.
It was, we're calling it the definitive ICP episode. It was just Simon and I going back and forth about ICP for 20 minutes. So,
oh, nice. You need like a supercut with just like people saying ICP.
Or like a drinking game of some sort. So Anthony, I'm going to ask the data question because you're sitting on so much data, right? You're seeing trends, you're seeing what people are interacting with, what's resonating. Are there any things that you are seeing that either surprised you or were counterintuitive of the types of content that's resonating with specific types of persona or any sort of trends that people can learn from what you're seeing with your customer base or with what your own marketing efforts are?
Yeah, I'll say, you know, we are still learning for sure, but we've got about, call it 30 customers on the network today. And so I'd love to get to a place where we have some benchmark data that we can share. And I think we will at some point. But I will say anecdotally, at least one of the things that we've observed is there's no doubt video is the future, but most companies are not like all in on video yet. In fact, we see for many of our customers, they're starting with just bringing their editorial articles over and some of the written content. We did a survey of a number of our advisors as well, and just basically stack rank your content investments and where you're spending your time. And the written word is still heavy right up on the top of the list. So I think one thing that surprised me was certainly it's getting, to your point, Adam, cheaper and easier to produce high quality video content. But I wouldn't say we've crossed the chasm in B2B yet on being completely video first. I think folks like yourselves are leading the way. We're trying to do it as well. But I was surprised to see that blog content is not dead. Written content has not gone away. We're still reading, it turns out, as society. And I think that's a good thing. So that's one of the things that caught me off guard a little bit as we were getting started.
So I want to shift gears a little bit. And you put this on LinkedIn. You spent, I don't know how many years, trying to get a CS or customer success software category recognized by analyst firms and so forth. And then, which is just a couple months ago, right? That it just up and showed up one day on...
A week ago.
Or was it a week ago? Oh, I have no sense. See, the space-time continuum, I'm not perceiving. But talk about what happened, because that was just like, probably blew your mind. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah. So I think I jumped through this a little bit, but former CMO at Gainsight, spent 7 years there building a category, which is like... Yeah, again, I wrote a book called Creating a Category. I think if I ever wrote like a sequel, it'd be Don't Create a Category. Sorry to the publishers if you're listening. One of the things that comes up in that process is this tension with analysts, because in the historical context, analysts crown categories, right? That's the Gartner MQ, the Forrester Wave, and so on. And that's been careful not to get myself in trouble here. That has been the legacy way of doing it. And at Gainsight, the experience was particularly interesting because we were early customers of Gartner and we spent a decent amount of money. And then we had this like analyst change early on in our journey where it was a former customer success manager from Salesforce became a Gartner analyst covering our space. We're like, we're in, this is it. We're finally going to get covered. And it was wild. It was like after so many briefings and everything, would refuse to acknowledge customer success as a category. And we had competitors and we had all of the right things. We were investing. And so thankfully over time, I think now there is a magic quadrant, I believe, for customer success, or at least there's recognition across the major analysts. But that was not something even remotely on my radar 1 year into market here with Audience Plus. What we did do about 6 months ago, and what I did actually write about in that book, was I think the power of customer voice is likely democratizing the category crowning process. And so I looked at things like G2 as a better proxy for who's in a leadership position and so on. And so when we started our G2, no-goated pretty well. And so I was like, look, we need to get involved with G2. We had only a handful of customers at that point. And so we started putting together our case to be made to basically be featured as a brand somewhere on their marketplace. And what was interesting is, you know, when you're an early company, you're like, okay, so what is our positioning? What quadrant do we fit in? And I know if you're an early stage startup listening to this, that is always a challenge. And so we're like, we're kind of like a CMS today. And that's not our principal value, but that's like part of the problem we solve. And so can our six customers go up against WordPress and HubSpot and Webflow and Contentful? We're going to get destroyed there.
Well, and it is a volume game, let's be honest.
It is a volume game, totally. It's like, all right, so what else are we? We're like, okay, well, you know, we think this audience relationship thing has some type of proxy to the marketing automation use case. So I'm like, okay, are we going to go up against HubSpot and Marketo? No, we're going to, if we invest in G2, we're going to get killed on these quadrants. And so we spent a lot of time talking to an amazing analyst team over there. And we realized there's something pretty new here in terms of what we were proposing. And it was really around this idea of building subscribers to your content. And so we looked at who are the companies that are really enabling that? Well, it's Patreon, Substack, Beehive, a little bit more in the consumer context, a company called Kajabi. And so what was interesting about half of that list is they sell to consumers, creators, or different, they're not your traditional B2B company. So they weren't, at the time at least, spending a ton of money on these typically B2B marketplaces. And so we found a list of competitors that fit with the unique niche that we were trying to solve. And G2 decided that was good enough to start a category around. So we got the G2 category launched, which was great. And ever since we've been growing our customer list, we've been trying to send traffic and kind of build that muscle around getting reviews. 6 months goes by, 8 months goes by, whatever. And last week we get a email saying that we're featured on, basically, to be completely fair, Gartner's version of G2. It's their peer insights platform, I believe it's referred to as. So this is not suggesting there's a magic quadrant for a company that, or a category that is less than a year old at this point, or just over a year old. But still, it's, I think, pretty good validation. And a lot of the same list of companies that were featured on the G2 quadrant are featured in there. From our perspective, that's, again, we're not claiming victory, but it's a win.
A win.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly.
Very cool.
So now that you're starting to get recognized, are you starting to see like other platforms that are popping up that are squarely going after? Because that's when you really do, right?
Not yet, actually. So we'll get there, hopefully. But what we are seeing is a lot of agencies building a practice or positioning themselves as an owned media agency, which these are folks that do like podcast production as a service or video content or things along those lines. So that was the first industry to fall. We know that there are some other big companies that are building towards this space as well, which is interesting, but nothing has been announced yet. But no, we haven't seen this sort of head-to-head competitor. And you're right, like it's actually a good thing when it does happen because it helps validate what you're working on. So
it's coming. It's got to be coming. Like even in the last, like from when you launched to now, the noise in the market and the discussion has only gotten stronger.
Yeah. We feel really good about product market fit. I think we've got some really good signals that would lead us to believe we're there. But I think what we're really looking forward to, Simon, the question you asked around these insights that we can actually help tell you about your content as a, what we think is a killer feature of Audience Plus that's kind of coming next.
I mean, there's so much scope for thought leadership and owning so much of that story. Listen, Anthony, we could go on for much longer, but I feel we've covered a lot of the topics we wanted to cover. And thank you for being so thorough and generous with your responses. We have a question that we ask everyone on the podcast. It is, in your career, what is the most ridiculous thing you've been asked to do? Good or bad, but just what is the most ridiculous ask at some point in your career?
I don't know why this is coming to mind, but conferences and event marketing has been a big part of my playbook. And every year at Gainsight, we did it for 7 years at Gainsight, multiple kind of shows a year, the ask was to do it cheaper the next year.
Of course.
And it's like, we need more people. Let's do it at Moscone Center and break even. So being asked to break even for an industry conference or user conference, I think, unless there's some folks out there that are just amazing at that, we have never been able to even come close.
Our events team would probably have, you guys could get together and have a drink and be like, yep.
Okay, good.
Well, thank you so much. This was a great conversation. A lot of really actionable, like for everyone out there that's like hearing all this stuff, like here's some things to start with. I think this was a great way to do that. So thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Revenue Makers.
Do you have a revenue project you were asked to execute that had wild success? Share your story with us at sixthsense.com/revenue, and we might just ask you to come on the show. And if you don't want to miss the next episode, be sure to follow along on your favorite podcast app.